All right. Now, we want to talk a little bit about financing. Now, before we get to the economy, let's come to Deuteronomy 28 here for just a minute. Because if Obama is elected president and installed as president and is not impeached, and no one brings a case to the Supreme Court to have him dislodged, then you are going to see an astonishing fulfillment of Deuteronomy 28, verse 43, page 321. The stranger dwelling among you shall get up above you very high, and you shall come down very low. And we will see an absolute, literal, just profane fulfillment of that. Now the next verse. He shall lend to you, and you shall not loan to him. He shall be the head, and you shall be the tail. Now let's talk about economics, because they're tied together. So you have the political, and you have the economic. So I'm going to do some reading about what's happening, what is likely to take place, and why we are having these world meetings that we are having now. Today there is a meeting of 43 nations about the economic crisis in the world, because it's not just a crisis in America, but in the world. And they're wanting to know how they can keep from going broke themselves, because the United States was rescued with what they did and what the Federal Reserve did. And we'll talk about that a little bit later, too, as we go along. But there's going to be another meeting, November 15th, which is going to involve all the major banking nations of the world. And it's going to be quite interesting what they may be talking about. But let's understand this. With the central banks of the world, they are all modeled after the United States Federal Reserve. And with the crisis that took place, the European common market and the euro was revealed to be very weak and unable to handle world currency transactions like the dollar. As a result, the dollar recovered from a low of 0.69 up to 0.85. The euro has dropped down to 130, and the yen has fallen way lower than that. So there are some things going on economically which are going to lead to, I think, a different way of coming to the one world government. And that is this way. Install, first of all, a one world banking system, and then a one world currency. And you have to do this in stages. And right now, they are calling for a one world money. Now, I read some of this during the feast, so I'll cover just a couple of those. Then I have an awful lot of material that some of it I'm going to read, and some of it I am going to summarize. Now, this is from forcingchange.org. Paul Volcker, a global economy requires a global currency. And he fully supports a single global currency. I also have a book that I've had for some time called A Single Global Currency. Quite an interesting thing. And they are targeting 2024 for a global currency. I believe it'll be much sooner. Didn't bring my cowbell today. Okay. The greatest struggle, now this is from Jack Weatherford, anthropologist and author, the greatest struggle of history has been for the control over money. It is almost tantalogical to affirm that to control the production and distribution of money, it is to control the wealth, resources, and people of the world, and much more so today, since we are on an electronic, digital movement of monies. The control of money and credit strikes at the very heart of national sovereignty. And that is A.W. Clausen, president of Bank of America. Once a nation parts with control of its currency and credit, it matters not who makes the nation's laws. Now, this is by W.L. Mackenzie King, former Prime Minister of Canada. Now, that is a true statement. It's recorded that Rothschild said, "Matters not who is the government as long as I control the money, because the ones controlling the money tell the government what to do. Otherwise, they don't give them money." So all this brings up an interesting question. Does the world need a global central bank? We will talk about that because they've already talked about it, and I believe I can tell you how it will happen. And it will be far more interesting than you could imagine. If you want a single world currency, it requires an international banking structure armed with a monetary policy on a global scale. And that's what these conferences are about. They are going to set up global standards for the central banks. And the Federal Reserve Bank has ended up being the strongest, the biggest, the most important of the central banks of the world. Though the dollar has taken a hit, it has survived the onslaught of those who wanted to take it down. Essentially, the requirement for a single global currency is a bank that has power over all countries, kindred, and tongues. Now, I brought up a little bit about that in Revelation 13 during the feast, that which will be on one of the tapes there, one of the CDs, that this will lead to the mark of the beast. And I also tied that in during the feast with the singularity is near with Ray Kurzweil. There is currently a conference led by Ray Kurzweil, who wrote the book The Singularity is Near, with all the major chip makers in Silicon Valley. So it'll be interesting to see what the results of that would be. And I had one man write me and say, "Well, you spent too much time on Kurzweil. You should have preached the word." Well, I think that we need to know how these things are going to come down and how Satan is planning for his world as well. So, anyway. So this was by, then here, former Canadian Member of Parliament, Paul Hellyer, criticized this development in 1994, saying that under such a global currency banking system, the interest of citizens and individual countries must be subordinate to the interests of international finance. Countries would no longer be able to pursue any kind of independent policy. Sovereignty over the most powerful of economic tools would be turned into an international monster run, a world bank run by world kingship of international appointees collectively not accountable to anyone. Now here's 1994. They've been planning this for a long time, so think about this. Every crisis economically brings us a step closer to the fulfillment of a single world currency or single global currency. 1994, Richard N. Cooper, professor of Harvard, speaking at the Federal Reserve Bank in Boston. "I put forward a radical alternative scheme for the next century, the creation of a common currency for all industrialized democracies with a common monetary policy and a joint bank of issue to determine that monetary policy. This proposal is far too radical for the near future, but could provide a vision or goal which could guide interim steps." They've already taken some of those. And I will tell you about a company that hardly anybody knows about, which controls all the stocks and all the bonds in the world except for just a very few that you probably have never heard of and don't know about, which will have a great deal to do with setting up World Bank. Here's Brian Taylor, chief economist at Global Financial Data. "The transition," this is 1998, "the transition to a single currency for the entire world could come with a speed that might surprise many." And I think that if it were based primarily on the dollar, and then we'll throw in the euro and the yen. And remember the Trilateral Commission? What did that do? Bring the United States, Europe, and China together, right? Trilateral. See, all of these organizations have an agenda that they're working on. But we're all so busy down here working, going about our daily activities, that we don't know anything of what they're thinking, what they're doing, what they're planning, and then all of a sudden we have a crisis. And what was the latest crisis that we had? $700 billion bailout. I'll talk about that a little bit later. But remember, the resistance to it was so strong on Monday, 200-1, that by time they got done with all the propagandist news and all the doom and gloom, Friday, it was 50-50 to vote for it to approve it. So crises are engineered to forward these policies and to give the ones that have the money greater control. And I don't think we understand the power of the Federal Reserve Bank. Let's go on. Now, some of you already have a world money, as I mentioned, if you have a credit card. 2001, and this is by Sarah Perry, Director of Visa's Strategic Investment Program. When Visa was founded 25 years ago, the founders saw the world as needing a single global currency for exchange. Everything we've done from a global perspective has been trying to put one piece in place after another to fulfill that global vision. 2004. And this is from Martin Wolf, Chief Economics Commentator for the Financial Times, former senior economist at the World Bank. World Bank. You know, they have a World Bank. And they have the International Monetary Fund. So we need to think about those. What are they doing sitting out here? Do they have a global reach? How could they be used in the future? What could happen to all of a sudden bring forth a world bank and solve the economic problems of the world almost overnight? I'll tell you about that. There's what he says. 2004, you can see the progression. If the global market economy is to thrive over the decades ahead, a global currency seems the logical concomitant. 2007, and this is from Council on Foreign Relations, and they propelled the idea of a planet-wide currency restructuring by publishing an article in its journal, Foreign Affairs, which I get, by the way. If you want to know what the enemy is doing, read their books. Titled, End of National Currency. Note on the cover of the Foreign Affairs issue, the article is titled, One World, Too Many Monies. Okay? Here's one. Ben Steele, the Director of International Economics at the CFR. Now, remember the CFR, the Council on Foreign Relations. They are one of the leading institutions behind the secret government, which runs the United States government. And they have their counterparts in all the major countries of the world who are the ones who have the power. And they're the ones who make sure that the ones they want to get in power are elected. So here's what he said. It's what he wrote concerning monetary systems that they should be abandoned. Since economic development outside the process of globalization is no longer possible, World Trade Organization, all of the free trade organizations that come along, they build, they build, they build, they build, they build. And what happens? Now we've got a system. Now they say economic development outside the process of globalization is no longer possible, which means you must join the global movement. Okay? stated more succinctly, monetary nationalism is simply incompatible with globalization, and in order to globalize safely, countries should abandon monetary nationalism and abolish unwanted currencies. So they float this out there as a trial balloon and a proposition. Then it talks a little bit about the Amero and integrating Canada, Mexico, and the United States. So then another goal of the single global currency. The world is ready to begin preparing for a single global currency just as Europe prepared for the euro and as the Arabian Gulf countries are preparing for their common currency. After the goal of a single global currency is established by nations representing a significant portion of the world's GDP, then the project can be pursued like the regional predecessors. I think that because of what has happened, that they will advance the single global currency faster and bypass the regional currencies because of the weakness that is noted in the regional currencies that happened with the euro here recently. All right. Okay. You want to know about single global currency? Go to the single global currency dot. Now, here's from their homepage. This is the homepage of the Single Global Currency Association, and I have it, the book right here, which is dedicated to the goal of implementing a single global currency within the global monetary union and managed by a global central bank by 2024. I think that'll probably jump up by maybe 10 years. Now, that's my opinion. We believe that once people, including their corporations and labor and other organizations of the world, understand the benefits of a single global currency, they will demand it from their governments. The single global currency is what the people of the world need, and that's what they want. Single global currency would likely have a new name which denotes its global use, like Mundo, Global, or Eartha. That sounds like too much like Mirtha to me, just as the euro is currently for Europe. It likely would not be the expanded form of any current currency, such as the dollar, euro, or yen. I think to start, they could start out with combining the dollar, euro, and yen and begin from there. With the use of a single global currency, there would be no more need for expensive currency exchanges or expensive hedges against currency fluctuations. Gone would be the currency speculation and the risk of currency failures and balance of payments problems. Such a currency would therefore be more effective as a means of conveying true value without the consideration of the political winds of the day. The single global currency would be managed by a single global central bank with representative governing boards for the people, governments, and financial institutions of the world. Implementing a single global currency for international transactions and as legal tender in participating countries does not mean that other currencies cannot coexist with such a single global currency, so they phase it in, just like they did with the euro. Then it talks about the euro. The global central bank would be financed by whatever benefits would come from printing money and sovereignty. I'll explain that in just a minute. Any surplus monetary benefits coming to the bank would be allocated to politically agreed upon goals such as the reduction of foreign debt or the eradication of disease or the support of family planning. Mark that, reduction of foreign debt. That is the key, I believe, on how they're going to do it. I'll tell you in just a little bit. As it's thought by many economists that a single global currency would be good for the people of the world, and many economists, non-economists, expect a single global currency someday, why not obtain the benefits sooner than later? So they're going to push it. It will surely benefit all the people of all the countries of the world if there is a single global currency, just as it currently benefits California and Maine to be in the same monetary system with the U.S. dollar and for Germany and Portugal to be in the European Monetary Union. Let's start planning now. So then they will ask those who specialize in that to do the planning and push forward for it. Now, you can go to... Okay, that's it. All right. Now, let me pass this out. There we go. Jonathan, you can pass it out. One to everybody. I think we have it there. The world needs a single global currency for at least 10 reasons. So here are the 10 reasons. And then we will see after that what happens to the global central bank and how they make money. And how I think they could set it up that everyone would be willing to go along with it. Okay. Number one, eliminate direct and indirect transaction costs of trading from one currency to another, because the currency exchange then gives a percentage to the exchangers. Number two, eliminate the balance of payments, current account problems of all countries. We would not be sending $700 billion off to the Arabs for our oil. Even though we paid them $700 billion, it doesn't come back as a negative on us any more than the little bit that California sends to Maine takes away from Maine's economy, or the little bit that Maine sends here adds to the California. See, it'll be one currency. Number three, eliminate the risk of currency failure, currency risk. Number four, eliminate the uncertainty of changes in value due to exchange-caused fluctuations in currency value and the cost of hedging to protect against such fluctuations. For example, there was a time when the Australian dollar was about 97% of one U.S. dollar when the dollar hit a low. And if you then made a transaction, say, of $10,000 wire transfer from Australia to the United States, it would cost you a little over 10,000 Australian dollars to convert that into 10,000 U.S. dollars. Now with the current account being at 0.68 to the dollar, in other words, two-thirds of a dollar, it now, in order to send $10,000 to America, will cost you, instead a little over $10,000, it'll cost you nearly $14,000 Australian dollars to send that money. So that type of thing would be completely eliminated. Number five, cause an increase in the value of assets for those countries currently afflicted with significant country risk. Number six, eliminate the misalignment of currencies. Number seven, we'll explain this here, utilize the seniority benefit and control of printing money for the operations of the global central bank and for public benefit. All right, come down here to what I copied out of the dictionary. Senior G, that's the way you pronounce it, which is this. One, something claimed or taken by a sovereign or other superior as his just right or due. Two, any profits or charges arising from the minting of gold and silver coins from bullion, usually the difference between the face value and the intrinsic value. Now look down here for the other pronunciation, signori, the bottom one, which is the dominion, rights, or authority of a signor or feudal lord, lordship, the extent or territory covered by this, a body of lords, especially those of a medieval Italian republic, and then it gives it alternate spelling there. All right, what are we talking about? If we have a world global bank, we are going to have what? Princes or lords sitting on it, right? And they are going to, with the transactions and with making the money, they are going to accumulate fees, which could be, as we'll see what it will be here in just a minute. Now, let's come back here to number 8. Just keep that in mind. They're not offering the global bank as a means so everyone is going to share the wealth. They're doing it for profit for themselves, the elite money makers. And this means they will benefit the most because they won't have to have losses in trading currencies and buying stocks and bonds and anything, but they will have a fee on every transaction that is made. All right, let's come back here to number 8. Eliminate the need for countries or monetary unions to maintain international reserves of other currencies. Number 10, reduce worldwide inflation to a planned low rate of approximately 2% and thereby ensure loan interest rates. See, all of these are compelling reasons, aren't they? Yes, indeed. Number 10, confirm or implement a basic fundamental human right as noted by Ludwig Erhard, just as is the fundamental human right to own property. Now, transaction cost, which then ties in with number 7. Every day, more than $1.4 trillion of currencies are traded on the foreign exchange markets, and every transaction costs something. It is estimated that the average cost of all transactions, including all the staff and equipment, is 0.33%. Or approximately $1 trillion per year. So you know what the saying is. A little money here and a little money there adds up to real dough later on. See? Although 0.33 of 1% is a small percentage, $1 trillion is a lot of money in a world where millions go to bed hungry every night. In addition, there is an indirect cost with every transaction of time, inconvenience, and mistake. All right. Now, question comes up about labor rates and, you know, cost of working an hour. It fluctuated, but they're gradually trying to coordinate them so they will all flush out the same. So that means that those making a lot of money will come down and those making no money will come out, but it'll take years to bring that about. All right. Here is a possible way of doing it at an early stage. Monetary linking of major currencies, Robert Mundell has suggested at the World Economic Forum and elsewhere that three major currencies, the dollar, euro, and yen, could be linked together and pegged to each other at a fixed rate, meaning that there would be no balance of payments between America, Europe, and Japan. In order to do that, there would have to be an agreement among the three central banks to march to the same drummers. In other words, associate close together for a future merger. That would still leave the other countries and currencies of the world floating, but it would be a more stable currency exchange world. Now, this is what the conference that is being held, I think it's in Washington, D.C., maybe not, but I just saw that there were 43 nations as I glanced at the news this morning, talking about how they can come out of all of the financial problems that are the result of what the Americans did with the subprime loans, and other greed. And I thought it was most interesting that this week Greenspan came up and blamed all of Wall Street, but he didn't blame Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac that he helped set up to do all those subprime loans, see. So, you know, it's, there are a lot of politics in there, you know. Who, me? I was surprised. I didn't know this would happen. Well, you're ahead of the Federal Reserve. Yes, I'm a genius. That's correct. Now, there will be, watch the meeting, November 15th. That's going to be a key meeting. And they are going to talk about coordinating the policies between the major central banks of the world to avoid the kind of problems we have had. All right. Now, let's shift to something else related but different and will be brought in to help underwrite the World Bank for single global currency. Have you ever wondered how it is that the United States keeps borrowing trillions and trillions and trillions of dollars, and on this last one, they just approved the limit to $11.7 trillion? And everyone says, wow, what are we going to pay this back? And I'll tell you how. The Federal Reserve holds all of those notes. And what is the backing? Not the good faith of the United States of America. Bankers always demand collateral. So as I mentioned before, the other unknown corporation, which is the United States of America Corporation, which is the legal entity that borrows from the Federal Reserve, it has given up its right. Congress gave up its right to produce the money at no cost and gave it to the Federal Reserve, which is a private bank having nothing to do with the federal government at all and was signed into law by President Woodrow Wilson. Now, if you want history on that, you can go read that. And there are many books out about it, and everyone rails against the Federal Reserve and all of that sort of thing, but they are in control, and they're a whole lot more powerful than you ever thought that they would be, and they don't reveal how much money they really have because they don't have to give a public audit because they are not a publicly held corporation. Now, in conjunction with this, there is another unknown $23 trillion company that has assets of $23 trillion and no debt. And it's located in America. And it operates in New York City. And it is called the Depository Trust and Clearing Corporation. Now you can go on the news log of Fleming Funch, F-U-N-C-H. And you can also go on the Depository Trust and Clearing Corporation, see their website. He said, it looks a little boring, some kind of financial service thing with a positive slogan, and out there it makes a little business. You can even get a job there. Now go take a look at their annual report. Starts with a nice little flash presentation and has a nice message from the CEO. Take a look at the numbers. It turns out that this company holds $23 trillion in assets. And had $917 trillion worth of transactions in 2002. Add all of that up, more than what we have today up till today. That is in thousands of millions, $23 trillion in assets and no debt. How did that happen? What do we know about this? Who are these people? What do they do? Well, here's what they do. They process the vast majority of all stock transactions in the United States as well as for many other countries, and that's a real interesting part. 99% of all stocks in the U.S. appear to be legally owned by them. Now, in the past, if you bought stocks, you went to a broker and you bought the stocks, And about 10 days later, you would get the stock certified from the company with your name on the stock as owner. But in order to accommodate electronic transfer of stocks, they created this company. And it owns, I'm going to say again, owns proprietary rights to all the stocks, and we can say 99% of them in the world, because they all come through the United States. The other little stock markets overseas don't amount to much. Now, they hold them in the title of CDE, and company. Now, what is CD? CD is a fictitious name, and if you look up the real meaning of seed, CEDE, it means to cede the right to someone else. So when people go buy stocks and they sign up with a broker and they sign this agreement, they say in here, read the fine print. You know what they always say? The devil's in the details. Well, the devil is in the whole thing in this, not just in the details. You give them ownership of the stock. The stock never leaves the depository trust corporation. All you get is an electronic entry, and you get just like your car. When you have a car, you owe a bank, you get a title. The bank owns the car, and you have the beneficiary use of it until it's paid for. So it's very similar to that. Even though you pay for the stock, you cede it. CEDE, that means surrender your ownership rights to this depository trust corporation, and they hold it for you. Now, this is all very convenient and really for your own good, because you can buy and sell. You don't have to worry about the stock. However, it gives all the assets to this corporation. And however, it's not known very well, but this is owned by, guess who? The Federal Reserve Bank. Now, the sham you saw of the $700 billion thing here recently was all window dressing for the Fed, so that people would not begin asking the Federal Reserve, where do you get all your money? Because they come play like poor little boys. You know, we just transact a little bit here, and we print the money, and yes, we print the notes, which then the government owes us all this money, and we lend, and we're very happy to give you $11 trillion in debt, because we own you, and we own the debt, and we own the depository trust company. Now, note this, the Federal Reserve does not have to give a public accounting of their monies. So you look at that $700 billion transaction that Congress passed recently, and then you look at how much the Fed is pouring out now in billions and hundreds of billions of dollars, way beyond the $700 billion that they asked for. Where are they getting the money? Are they loaning to themselves because they have the depository trust company, corporation of $23 trillion in assets? And if you did the leverage of 10, then you would take the 23 times 90, and you could create that much money in addition. How did the Fed have so much money to buy preferred stock in all of these big banks? Because they have it already, and they're not telling you. See? And they make a transaction fee on everything that goes through, which was $917 trillion worth of entries this past year. Now, I don't know what the fee would be. 0.1% would make you what? $900 million for the year? Just on a paper transaction, you do nothing but just click, 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 click. All of the stocks going through electronically. Yeah, $900 billion, yeah. $900 billion. Little chump change for, you know, Bernanke, you know. All right. Now let's carry this a little bit further. This is also tied in to the International Monetary Fund. I'm a little ahead of myself. Okay. By presidential executive order, the president can order the Depository Trust Corporation not to honor any of the transactions, and they own all of the stocks because it was ceded to them by the beneficiary holder. So if you think you own stocks, you have beneficiary use of the dividends and so forth that are paid, and the money that you make if it increases, or the money that you lose if it decreases, but they own it. This is absolute lordship serfdom. Well, you go back and go over the sermon I did on monetary dictatorship and multiply it by a couple of trillion, and that's where we sit. So you know for sure, though they're talking global recession, they're not going to let this last long because they're making too much money. They just want more control to come by it. Why are we having economic problems right now? Because there are a lot of liars and cheats involved in the whole system, which they did not control. No, the depository holds them there. So if the stock loses money, then the value of their assets go down. See, but if the stocks make money, the value goes up. And you, as a beneficiary holder title of it, you get the increase if you sell, or you take the hit if you lose. Or if there's a dividend to be paid, they pay you minus a transaction fee, which they keep. So when the stock market goes down, they lose in assets. So they don't want it to go. They don't want a total crash. But they remember, they make money going down and they make money going up. Remember in the letter I wrote when this first came out about a year ago, I said they are going into oil futures and they're driving the price of oil up, so they make money going up so they can replenish the money that they lost. With the exception of Lehman Brothers, it was so bad they had to flush it out. Just, you know, like taking dirty toilet paper and flush it down the toilet. Lehman Brothers is gone. And if you saw a picture of the CEO of Lehman Brothers, you would see a picture of total evil and cheating. That's why they flushed it out. All right. And it's to their advantage to keep us in a state of fear because they want to do something. Comment was made that a woman came into to buy a plot for her son who at 45 committed suicide because he lost all of his money in the stock debacle. Okay. Who keeps the money? If the stock goes down to 2 cents, who owns the stock? Depository Trust Company. What if after you have lost everything, the price of the stock comes up from 10 cents to $60? Who gets all the profit? That is shared by the brokers who then resell the stock that the Depository Trust Company has. They just changed the title. They just changed the beneficiary user of the stock. And they get a fee after it's all up there. So the brokers make money, the buyers and sellers of stock make money, the Depository Trust Company makes money, and this is why they had the great rush, because they did not want to expose the full amount of what the Federal Reserve has, nor did they want the Depository Trust Company to get in deep trouble. Now, it shows how this began in this paper. They ran a test October 19th, 1987, when the Dow Jones fell 508 points, losing 22% of its total value. And that was done on a test. So the one who writes this, he says, during my phone conversation with Mr. McNeff, he was trying to assure me that they, the DDC, the Depository Trust Corporation, have never lost a certificate or made a mistake in a book ledger transaction. In attempting to give me an example of how trustworthy the DDC is, when I asked him how he could back up such a statement, he replied, the DDT's first controlled test was 4 or 5 years ago. Do you remember Black Monday, he said. There were 535 million transactions on Monday and 400 million transactions on Tuesday. Now, that's 1987. Now they have it set up with the high-speed supercomputers that they can do over a billion transactions a day. Now, think of the money that is made on the fee from every one of those transactions. Never reported. You'd never know about it. Okay? The DDC's first controlled test was 4 or 5 years ago. I read that. He is very proud to inform me that the DTC cleared every transaction without a single glitch. Read the quotes again. He stated that Black Monday was a controlled test. Black Monday was deliberately a manipulated disaster for many Americans at the whim of a controlled test by the DTC. Then it talks about in February 22, 1996, The DTC will flip the switch, according to Mr. McNeff. What switch, I ask? This is the day that clearinghouse funds will no longer be accepted for stock or bond transactions, was my reply from Jim. Instead, only Fed funds will be accepted because now it is a part of the Federal Reserve. Fed funds only. That's why they have to run by the U.S. dollar. All pension funds consider this, he says. He says here, yes. Fed funds or Fed wire are electronic computer ledger debt transfers between Federal Reserve System member banks. No checks or drafts have been allowed from that day. This is more commonly called a cashless transaction. I call it the reality of the mark of the beast. In other words, that's the final thing getting up to it. All right, then he shows how it was done. Let me just go ahead and tell you how they can bring about a World Bank very quickly. You have all of this. This is the world. The DTC is the world's most powerful financial corporation in the world. They hold all these stocks. The Federal Reserve also holds all of the Treasury certificates and notes from the borrowings of the federal government and other governments around the world which are in debt to their Federal Reserve System. So here's how they could set up the World Bank very quickly. Not unite them politically, but get the single global currency moving. They could do it this way. They could free the United States from its debt by saying, since we hold the debt as an asset, we are going to transfer that asset to the new World Bank, likewise from the other central banks that join. We will take a certain percentage of the money that we make. You keep paying the interest on the debt, but we, with the money that we make, we will pay down the principal gradually, which they can make $2 or 3 trillion a year. So all of a sudden, we're debt-free. All the nations of the world are debt-free. You talk about an economic boom. Then let's require all of the banks now, and we will start this out by expanding the International Monetary Fund because it's already set up to handle international transactions. We will have all of the banks of the world pledge, because you can't move it, so much gold and silver as a backing for additional assets, and we will capitalize this World Bank with the greatest capitalization of the starting of any bank in the history of the world. And you will start reaping the benefits of those 10 steps that I just read to you why you need a single global currency. Now, with everyone burdened down with debt, with governments burdened down with debt, and all of this, what do you think their answer is going to be? I think they'll say yes. And I think they can bring this in before the Amero because they have now discovered the weaknesses of these regional currencies and they can't stand up in a time of crisis. And the regional central banks do not have the clout or the money or the banking of the Federal Reserve. And the Federal Reserve then will be the power behind. It will shift its, on paper, it will shift its power and assets to the International Monetary Fund, but they indeed will control it. Then they will have a new board of directors that will set the policy represented by whatever nations will be represented, and then they will come out with this plan, and they will say, peace and prosperity. Now, one other thing that is interesting with this is this. If the International Monetary Fund becomes the World Bank and controls all these assets, guess what? No nation can make war, because you need money to make war. Peace and security. So I just leave that for you to think on and watch. So don't get bored by all this economic and financial news. It's heading somewhere big time, and we'll end up with the mark of the beast. The last step that we can live with before the mark of the beast will be some sort of currency or transaction card. When they go to the chips in the hand and in the forehead, then we cannot. So you tie that together with Ray Kurzweil's conference going on up in Silicon Valley with all the leading chip makers. You look at what is happening economically. You look at the chaos that is in the world, and just think what a wondrous plan this would be. And remember, it says there in Daniel 11 that he takes the kingdom by deceit with flattering words. Now, I would like to make an addendum or postscript concerning the coming World Bank and the single global currency. Please understand that what I brought out concerning it may be quite a few years ahead of us. But nevertheless, I've given this so you can watch the news and see what is happening and see the progression that they are making in the steps that they are developing toward it. And the meetings that took place last week and in coming November 15th are going to lay the groundwork for the foundation on which the World Bank will be built when they're ready to bring it in. But nevertheless, they must first develop the systems so that they are in place before they bring on the bank, because they can't bring on the bank and then bring in the system. So the coordinated system of all the countries working together financially in the banking system must first be accomplished, and that is also a step-by-step basis. But nevertheless, we do know in the final analysis the mark of the beast is coming, and all of these are steps leading up to it.